The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today via video conference by Judge Greenberg and Judge Jaquith. We're here for the matter of Harris D. Martin versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 24-4893. Counsel for the parties, please go ahead and state your name and your appearance for the record.
I'm Kenny Dohakis for the appellant, Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Alexander Yu, representing the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dohakis. Thank you, Mr. Yu.
Good morning, Your Honors. Drew Silo, also representing the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Silo. Mr. Bennett, I believe you're muted. Okay, well, I believe Mr. Bennett is still muted, but.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Okay, I'm sorry. Stephen Bennett for the appellate.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Bennett. As you know, each party will have 30 minutes to present arguments. Mr. Dohakis, how much time would you like for rebuttal?
5 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay, we will do that. And Mr. Dohakis, you may move ahead when you're ready.
Thank you so much. May it please the court, on behalf of Mr. Martin, I want to thank this court for the opportunity to present his appeal. We are here today because the secretary, through the board, has flouted his legal obligation under 7104A to make a final decision on all questions in the matter presented in Mr. Martin's appeal. The secretary attempts to limit his legal obligations by saying he cannot order additional development, but he is wrong. The board held it had limited authority to review and consider evidence, specifically holding it could not alter the AOJ's determination that the duty to assist was not triggered. The board erred in at least three ways, all of which flow from this obligation to consider the entire record and make final decisions on the questions under 7104A. The board is wrong that evidence cannot alter an AOJ's implicit or explicit determination that the duty to assist has been satisfied. Secondly, even if the board cannot alter the AOJ's duty to assist determinations, the board can still consider the evidence and answer all questions in the matter before it, as it may trigger a remand for some other regulatory or statutory duty the AOJ overlooked. And third, the board may not shirk its obligations under 7104 or 20.801 to address all questions in the matter, make findings of fact, conclusions of law, on all material issues of fact and law presented on the record, whether a remand is available or not. I want to start, though, with just a brief explanation of the statutes as to that deal with what the content of the record is before the board.
Counsel, what about the duty to assist?
So the duty to assist, Your Honor, and I'm happy to start there, but I just want to, before I answer that question, I just want to highlight, unless the court has other questions, that I don't think there's any serious dispute between the parties as to what the content of the record is. But the board said that although it must consider the evidence at the hearing and that presented to the board under 7113, it couldn't do anything with it. Under the duty to assist, the secretary, in reading through the statute, the secretary shall treat an examination as being necessary. And the language specifically says if the evidence of record before the secretary, again, going back to 7104 and 7113, taking into consideration all information and lay and medical evidence, contains competent evidence of a current disability and indicates that the disability or symptoms may be associated with service. So the duty to assist was changed with the AMA. I don't think that there's, again, any serious dispute on that. 5103AE clearly limits the duty to assist to new and supplemental claims, but it does not mean that new evidence presented to the board cannot cause the VA to remand for the correction of a duty to assist error. Subsection F requires the board to seek to, as it says, identify or learn of an error while it considers the entire record de novo. Even though the duty to assist does not apply to the board, if the board identifies or learns of an error, then it must remand under the statute. I would just point the court to the NVLSP amicus brief, which I think did a wonderful job of explaining how the VA can learn of an error in this regard. But I want to emphasize that under the facts of this case, we can see how this operates. VA favorably determined that Mr. Martin suffered a qualifying event, injury, or disease during his service for all four of the claimed conditions. But the AOJ determined he did not have a disability, a current disability, for either of them. We know that based on the evidence the board considered, that the AOJ's determination that there is no current disability may not be correct. Again, I emphasize may not, because the board never went so far as to make a factual finding on the record. If he does in fact have a current disability, then we need to know that, and the board has an obligation to tell us that. And I can get into that a bit more later, but under the statutes, these findings of fact made by the AOJ are not static, and the board's analysis seems to imply that the facts are static and they freeze until a supplemental claim is filed, and that's just not how the statutes are written. They can change and do change as more evidence is put in the record. The statutory scheme recognizes that the board is the final decision maker on all questions in a matter. This includes, as I mentioned earlier, under 7104D1, an obligation to make findings of fact and conclusions of law on the record, and to do that de novo, as a de novo review of the record.
Mr. DeHakis, so you are not challenging that a board remand here must be predicated on some kind of AOJ error. Or are you?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the statute requires an error on the part of the AOJ in performing its duty to assist. But what the board said is that it has to be evident based only on the record that the AOJ had. And that's just not true. The AOJ had evidence. And again, I think that the lumbar spine condition is a perfect example of how that works. The VA provided an examination. The VA examiner elicited the history, lay testimony from the veteran who said, yeah, I hurt my back. It's been hurting ever since. It's gotten worse over time. And whenever I do certain activities, the pain increases as the veteran, as it was recorded in the exam. That examiner found that the veteran did not have a current disability. That is error. In Barr v. Nicholson, among others, that's 21 Vet App 303, this case reinforced an adequate exam is based upon consideration of the prior medical history and describes the disability in sufficient detail so the board's evaluation of the claimed disability will be fully informed one. And the court also said that once the secretary undertakes the efforts to provide an examination, even if not statutorily obligated to, he must provide an adequate one, or at minimum notify the claimant why one will not be or cannot be provided.
So, Mr. DeHakis, I get what you're saying about the back condition. Can you go through the same analysis as to the skin condition, the hemorrhoids, and the thumb?
Yes, Sean. I recognize that these three.
Pointing out, let me be clear, pointing out what the AOJ error was for those three.
So within the duty to assist, it's difficult for us at this stage to really analyze what the AOJ should or should not have done because the board didn't make findings of fact. Now, I would say that with respect to those three, the board, under what it did say, that it could be a current disability, they've already acknowledged that there was an in-service event, injury, or disease, as the rating decision calls it. And so even on those facts, the AOJ, one, could have found service connection was present, or they could have found that there was at least an indication in the record under the correct facts that an that they were related to the service injuries or diseases. And the McClendon factors are, it highlights that it's not a very high standard to trigger an examination. But I think that what we would propose as a good rule is to look at what was presented to the AOJ, and if the new testimony or evidence presented to the board changes a fact the AOJ relied upon to either find there was no duty to assist, or as with the lumbar claim, to assist the veteran, but do so in a way that didn't account for the correct facts, then the board must correct that fact and order compliance with the duty to assist.
And so you're it sounds like you're arguing some kind of changed circumstance standard here for those other three. It sounded like you had your analysis lined up as to the back, but as to the other three.
Well, I think that the board here erred because it did not assess whether the assistance provided was adequate. And really, there was no assistance provided. But the board could very well come back and say, we do find that there was a current disability for these other three, and we affirm that the AOJ had no obligation to assist the veteran based on what they knew at the time. Now, I'm not going to push too much on those three under the duty to assist remand, because I do recognize that what the AOJ knew at that time was not very much. But we do think that at the very least, the board should be the one to make that assessment under the correct facts. But even so, there
And is that the standard, Mr. Dehakis? The question is, what did the AOJ know at the time? What if the board, in the receipt of evidence pursuant to the evidentiary submission windows, concludes that an error in the application or the provision of fulfillment of the duty to assist occurs in retrospect? Can that not be remedied, addressed by the AOJ on remand from the board?
It absolutely can, Your Honor. And I think, again, that goes back to what would the correct facts show under McClendon, at least with respect to whether an examination was warranted. And there are other duties to assist. And again, the amicus briefs highlighted those, where there's obtaining evidence, there's some other things. This case, and you know, the facts of this case are specifically about whether an examination was warranted. And McClendon is a very low, it may indicate that it's related, that it could be related to the in-service injuries, which again, the VA has already conceded and favorably found, binding on the board, that there was an in-service event, injury, or disease for all four of these. And once we've now established that there's a current disability, then that changes the dynamic and the analysis that the AOJ implicitly made. And again, I think it's important to keep in mind that at no time did the VA ever tell Mr. Martin that it would not assist him and why it would not assist him. It simply said, you don't have a current disability, which we know may be wrong and is likely wrong based on what the board said. But without these findings by the board, it's difficult for this court to step in and look at the factual underpinnings of whether the duty to assist would have applied. But we do think that at least in these facts, when Mr. Martin tells the VA that he has a problem with these conditions, as he did in his application form, and the VA confirms that they at least had an onset of something during service, that comes very close to triggering the McClendon analysis and entitling him to an examination. So even under the very bare facts that are in this case, our position is that it could still lead to the board finding the AOJ should have developed additional evidence, at the very least a medical examination.
And Mr. Dehakis, when you answered Judge Jaquith a minute ago, his question was, what if the board concluded that the duty to assist was somehow deficient in retrospect? You said, that would be that would work here under the law. Whenever you said yes to his question about in retrospect, were you talking about including the evidence that the veteran submitted, gave to the board?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And it can be either on the evidence that AOJ already had and knew at that time, or it can be based on the new evidence. And again, what we see Congress doing with 7104, 7113, the closing of the record, is that it's still requiring the board to make the findings of fact, to make the conclusions of law based on not only what the AOJ knew, but what the board now has before it. And that has to allow the board to change those findings. Otherwise, there's no reason to even submit the evidence. If the AOJ's findings of fact are set in stone without a supplemental claim, then there's no reason to have a hearing, and there's no reason to even offer evidence to the board.
But you are not arguing that the lay statements of continuity that the veteran made as far as these four conditions, or at least three, because I think they already had some evidence as to the back, at least as to the three conditions, you're not arguing that that lay evidence would suffice so that it should be clear to the court that there was a McClendon violation based on that evidence. What you're arguing is something a little more narrow.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that because of how the board made its decision, it didn't make an explicit finding of fact. The board said that suggests he may have current disabilities now. And that's not the same as he does have a current disability. Had the board said there is a current disability, we make that finding here, then the AOJ was wrong. The AOJ found that there was in-service event injured disease. And then if the board had also said that the evidence supports a continuity of symptoms such that it indicates that there was a connection, then we would be arguing for a reversal and an order to remand the claim to the AOJ for assistance under the statute. But here we don't have those findings. And so what we're really looking for is a tailored order that's limited in telling the board, you have to assess this evidence in conjunction with the rest of the record and make findings of fact, make conclusions of law, and then determine whether under those correct facts that the AOJ should have done more. But right now we don't have that.
And so you're not arguing that the board was necessarily obligated, that the AOJ definitively made an error, and that therefore the board was obligated to send this case back. You are arguing that the board failed to make assessments that are required as to whether the veteran should have been given a McClendon exam or something like that.
Correct, Your Honor. Although I will just say that, you know, the briefing focused a lot on the board's refusal to do anything with the evidence, but we think that to the extent that the court finds it can, we would ask that you find they did err in finding the duty to assist was satisfied for the lumbar spine. That exam is wholly inadequate because it completely ignored the lay evidence. And so under Saunders and some others, but I don't want to get too much into that because again, the findings of fact were not made by the board, which hamstrings what this court can do under Tadlock, Stinson, and 7261C. So what we're looking for primarily is that the board can't just do nothing with it, which is what they did here. It suggests that it might make favorable findings for the veteran, but then stop short of doing that. And the statutes very clearly require the board to go that next step. Even if they can't remand for a duty to assist, the regulation 20.802A also provides for a remand to correct any other error by the agency in satisfying a regulatory or statutory duty. The board lists this as an obligation at the beginning of its decision, but then never mentions it again and completely failed to assess whether a remand could be authorized under this part of the regulation. And under Thomas, it's potentially applicable and the board had an obligation to assess it. But again, the predicate to that is that the board must make findings of fact. That's really our biggest dispute with what the board did, is that they did nothing with the evidence. And once those findings of fact are made, if they support a remand for a duty to assist, fantastic. If they don't, maybe there's some other error that would authorize or warrant a remand. If not, there's still more that the board can do. The AMA framework.
Excuse me.
Yes, Your Honor.
What order would you like the court to enter to give your client complete relief?
So complete relief, Your Honor, would be that the board erred in failing to fulfill its obligations under 7104 A and D. The board must assess the entire record, including the testimony, and make findings of fact and conclusions of law on the matters within questions within the matters presented. That includes, at the very least, whether the veteran has a current disability for any of the claimed condition or any of the conditions claimed in his application. And then it must, under 20.802, determine whether a duty to assist error occurred, and or if not, then any other error. But even if the board comes back and says, and here's why this it's really important that that's the relief that we want. Even if the board makes those findings in his favor or not, but we think that they would, and there is no remand authorized, the veteran is now set, has now moved forward in his claim. The final rule of the AMA that the secretary published in 84 Federal Register 138, and I'm looking on page 138 of that, the secretary highlighted the streamlined features of the new process. And they said that this allows for early resolution of a claimant's appeal, and the lane options allow claimants to tailor the process to meet their individual needs and control their VA experience. And it specifically says that that a claimant after an AOJ decision could go straight from there to an appeal to the board. If the board decision was not favorable, he has two further options. This is why this is so important. If the board's decision helped the claimant understand the evidence needed to support the claim, then the claimant would have 1 year to submit new and relevant evidence and a supplemental claim. And that's what the board kind of ignored when it stopped short of making that final finding of fact. If the board came out in Mr. Martin's favor and said, yeah, you have a current disability, you have an event, injury, disease, but right now we don't have a duty to assist you, he could file a supplemental claim. He's now armed with two favorable findings, which under the regulations bind the VA, absent a clear and unmistakable error, which is really, really powerful from our experience in dealing with veterans claims. And now he knows all I have to do now is at the very least submit additional evidence that can indicate under McClendon that an examination is warranted, or go even further and present evidence that definitively links and shows that the disabilities resulted from that. But in keeping with the secretary's recognition of this, the streamlined features of this new process, the board's decision and its actions frustrates that. And so it negates this feature. And this feature is vital to the framework created by the AMA.
So, Mr. DeHakis, I feel like I'm trying to drive home a certain point, but I'm just going to repeat it again because I want to make sure I understand your responses. You're not actually arguing that the AOJ erred. You're arguing that the board erred by not assessing the evidence. It was saying, like, hands off all post AOJ decisional evidence. We can't look at it. And that was their error. They should have made findings of fact about the evidence that was before the are before the AOJ in order to determine whether there was an error down below.
Correct, Your Honor. Right. The board essentially said that this new evidence can't change any of the facts that the AOJ made. And that's wrong, because the board is obligated by Congress to make the findings of fact the final decision on these questions in the matter. And I keep repeating this, the terminology from 7104A, because one question in the matter presented to the board was whether he has a current disability. That is a finding of fact that is material to the determination under 7104D1. And so the board didn't do that. And until it does that, we can't know whether the AOJ satisfied the duty to assist or made an error in finding that it didn't have to do anything else.
You know, Mr. DeHakis, one thing that occurred to me as I was looking at this is the AOJ decision here didn't explain why they gave an exam for the back, didn't for the other conditions. You have to kind of infer what their thought process was. Was there any obligation by the RO to now, especially now that the board is looking at whether there was appropriate assistance and compliance with regs and statutes down below on the part of the AOJ, was there some kind of obligation by the AOJ to be clear about whether McClendon was met? I mean, obviously you assume they thought it was met as to the back, but what their analysis was as to the other conditions? They really didn't mention the RO didn't mention the duty to assist, which is typical, but things have changed now and we don't have any insight into what they were thinking. As a matter of fact, it's possible that the board would could remand to the RO, let's say, and find some kind of AOJ error, and the RO would say, well, there wasn't an error, here's why. Like, we don't really know why they acted as they did or failed to act as they did in this case. And would that help the board, or is it that the board has de novo review and it wouldn't really matter anyway what the RO said as to the basis for its action or inaction?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that question, Your Honor. I didn't get to it in my other discussion of the other regulatory statutory duties, but that is precisely the kind of error that the board can correct under that second part of 20.802A. One of those statutory duties is 5104. The notice of a decision is no longer provided by the board. That's precedent. And
right.
So
which part of 5104 would this 5104B would this fall under? Because there are six or seven items there, I believe.
Yes, Your Honor. So again, we're looking at under the correct facts, and as the facts that the AOJ found, where there is no current disability, that changes the dynamic of the notice, but it also changes some of the other provisions in there. So summary of the applicable laws and regulations. If there is no current disability, then 5103A D in obtaining an examination is not an applicable law or regulation. But if you do have it, it very well may be an applicable, or at least a potentially applicable, as Thomas and Chaffrath indicated, under similar language under 7104, it's potentially applicable, which means the AOJ should have addressed whether an examination was provided. And this is all anchored in the court's ruling in Maddox that the board does not give this notice anymore. And this notice is specifically tailored as part of this new framework that Congress created to give information to the veteran at each step so that he can make informed decisions about how to proceed. And so the notice is critical to understanding that. The board has 7104D1, which is very helpful, but the AOJ doesn't. And so certainly if the correct facts cause the notice to become defective, then the board could again, and we recognize it's somewhat permissive. I would argue that it's not permissive. That issue is not before the court. There are other cases where could and may actually means must. But at the very least, it could have led to the board finding that, for instance, the duty to notify under 5104 was defective, or really any other statutory regulatory duty.
Okay, Mr. Dehakis, we've run a little bit over on you. Judge Greenberg, do you have any further questions?
No.
Okay, Judge Jaquith?
No.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dehakis. And Mr. Yu, you may move ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. The outcome of this case is dictated by appellant's choice of appeal option. Under Section 5103 Big A, the duty to assist is limited to the AOJ and therefore no longer applied when appellant testified at the September 2022 hearing. In this case, the board complied with the dual requirements under Sections 5103 Big A and 7113 Little B in reviewing the September 2022 hearing testimony and had a plausible basis in the record for denying service connection for lack of evidence of nexus. Therefore, the court should affirm the board's denial of service connection as to the four claimed conditions. In my presentation, I will respond to the court's questions from the May 19, 2025 order. In response to the first and second questions taken together, the purpose of a board hearing is to provide veterans with an opportunity to submit new evidence and argument directly to a VLJ. The board's treatment of the September 2022 hearing testimony in this case comports with that purpose. In response to the third question, the board's review of the September 2022 hearing testimony complied with sections 5103 Big A and 7113 Little B and their corresponding regulations. In response to the fourth question, hearing testimony showing that the AOJ previously committed an error prior to issuance of the rating decision can establish a duty to assist remand. However, new evidence suggesting new development is needed can never establish a duty to assist remand. In response to the fifth question, appellant was provided with sufficient notice of the limits of the duty to assist as part of the statement of appellant rights with the April 2019 rating decision. And as a final additional point, if appellant wishes to invoke VA's duty to assist again, the AMA provides its own mechanism for doing so, and that is to file a supplemental claim.
Mr. Yu, as to your answer to the first two questions that we had for counsel, on page 6 of the record, that's the board decision, the board says, it says the veteran elected the hearing docket, therefore the board may only consider the evidence of record at the time of the AOJ decision on appeal, as well as any evidence submitted by the veteran or his rep. But then later, it seems as though the board is saying that it's completely hands off and they can't look at that testimony at all. Now, isn't there a difference between remanding on the basis of new testimony during a board hearing and making the kinds of findings of fact regarding whether the RO had failed the duty to assist down below? Isn't there a difference between those two?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it possible that the hearing testimony could inform, I'm not saying that it would be the basis for the remand, but could inform the board's assessment of whether there was a pre-decisional duty to assist issue?
Yes, Your Honor. So this actually goes to the response to the fourth question, and that hearing testimony can lead the board to determine that at the time of issuance of the rating decision, the AOJ did commit a duty to assist error. So for example, in this case, appellant could have made arguments at the hearing as to the adequacy of that back conditions examination, or could have submitted, you know, some statement indicating related to another duty to assist, such as relating to records. The secretary's position is not that hearing testimony cannot establish or leave the board to determine that the AOJ had committed some error. The secretary's position is that new evidence submitted at the hearing cannot suggest that new development is required, and that would, and that under the new framework of the duty to assist, the board is no longer permitted to remand for that new development. And so to turn
can
to the
point to any statute or regulation that says that?
Yes, Your Honor. We would suggest that under 5103 Big A, subsection E, it establishes that the duty to assist only applies to the AOJ. It excludes the board specifically. And under subsection F2, it establishes that the board only reviews the duty to assist for previous errors committed by the AOJ because the error must have, and I quote, occurred prior to the AOJ decision on appeal. The AMA does permit veterans to submit evidence.
That doesn't say anything that forecloses the board from discovering that a pre-decisional duty to assist error occurred, discovering post-decision that a pre-decisional duty to assist error occurred based on new information.
Your Honor, the Secretary would submit that the key point is the new information, whether it's identifying an error committed by the AOJ prior to issuance of the rating decision, or it's suggesting the need for new development. And perhaps the clearest example of this distinction is that...
aren't they a distinction without difference?
No, Your Honor, we would say that...
If the development of the duty to assist development by the AOJ was inadequate, the board now knows and therefore sends it back for them to adequately develop.
Your Honor, the Secretary would submit that this, the Congress's intentions in explicitly limiting the duty to assist only to the AOJ is to emphasize and to establish this distinction. And that is because while the AMA permits veterans to submit new evidence directly to the board, evidence which the AOJ will never consider prior to issuance of the board decision, it makes no sense if Congress intended to allow the board to remand based on this new evidence when it concurrently and explicitly limited the duty to assist only to the AOJ. Congress explicitly
Doesn't that just tell the board to send it back? Isn't that what that limitation does? It makes no sense for the board to take in all this evidence that they can't consider. That clearly violates the law.
No, Your Honor. The Secretary would disagree that the board cannot consider this new evidence. And indeed, in this case, the board demonstrated consideration of the September 2022 hearing testimony as to whether or not it would establish the elements of service connection. So in response to those first two questions, the new hearing testimony submitted at the September 2022 hearing could not establish a pre-decisional duty to assist error in this case. However, the board did consider it as part of whether or not the elements of service connection have been established. So the secretary would disagree first that, as appellant has argued, that the board did nothing with the September 2022 hearing testimony. In fact, the board considered the September 2022 hearing testimony, determined that the evidence suggests the veteran does have current disabilities, and more importantly, for the purposes of denying service connection, found that the September 2022 hearing testimony was insufficient to establish the nexus element. And so the hearing testimony in this case, while it couldn't establish a duty to assist error, does still have a purpose in the overall AMA appellate structure. And that is, it permits the veteran to submit new evidence that may establish the elements of service connection.
Mr. Yu, let's start with something that I think is fairly simple. I have a hard time believing that you're defending the board as to the back condition. The examination, and this is where it gets kind of complicated because the RO, we don't know what they thought, what they thought of all of the very obvious questions that arise as to the back. I mean, the back, admittedly, the examiner on the VAE down below found no back problem, but it also noted that the veteran gets physical therapy 2 to 3 times a month and takes gabapentin every day for the back condition. So, I'm guessing, because I don't believe the RO went into any detail about the back, that the RO just thought that was completely irrelevant as to whether there was a current back condition. Does that make any sense? Like, I'm having trouble believing that the secretary is defending that there was no pre-decisional duty to assist here as to the back. In addition, Mr. DeHaak has pointed to some other things that literally I don't know what the RO thought about it. I don't really know what the board thought, because it dispensed with the duty to assist here in one paragraph, and most of the words were irrelevant.
The secretary's defense in this case is, as articulated in the secretary's pleading, is based on the board decision and what they ultimately determined here. That even where the board made, even if the court were to find that the board's, statement of reasons or bases as it relates to the current disability element were inadequate, that ultimately that would be harmless. That the court could affirm the board's decision on the basis that there's insufficient evidence of nexus, and this was not challenged as part of the pleadings in this case. Now, as it relates specifically to the back condition examination, here the board did make findings as it relates to the adequacy of the examination, the duty to assist, before the AOJ. And the board had determined that the AOJ had satisfied the duty to assist as it relates to all the conditions. The secretary would submit
that's what I'm saying is a little bit hard to swallow.
The secretary would still submit that ultimately, even if the board were to make inadequate findings there, that the question before the court is, has the elements of service connection been established? And the secretary would submit that based on the evidence of record, based on the board's findings, there is insufficient evidence of nexus, and therefore the court could affirm. To turn briefly to that third question.
Didn't the board also err in its analysis of the veterans' competence to provide nexus evidence? I mean, the two cases it cited say exactly the opposite of what the board cited them for, Kahana and can't think of the other case name all of a sudden. Jandreau.
Lay statements can establish the nexus element. However, what the board had determined in this case was that the evidence before it, that the lay statements related to nexus in the case were insufficient under this particular circumstance.
That's not what the board said. The board said the lay statements weren't competent to opine as to nexus. Exactly the opposite of what Kahana and Jandreau said. At the very least, the board applied the wrong standard.
The board was speaking, yes, the board citations there are, the board's finding is specific to the facts of this particular case, and while its citation is not helpful as it relates to its actual findings, but the board's statement here is that in this particular case, the veteran is not competent to relate what it found was suggestive of a current disabilities with the evidence of in-service events, which the AOJ had previously found. That while it's a general statement,
symptomatology, which he absolutely is competent to provide. So,
yes. While it's a general matter,
they might have made findings that could have addressed that, but the board did not do so.
The secretary would submit that here, while the general statement made by the board is inconsistent with the citations, what the board is trying to articulate, and perhaps done poorly, is that in this particular, given the facts of this case, lay evidence would be insufficient to establish nexus, and that all the evidence that we have here as it relates to nexus is the lay statements from the September 2022 hearing. Allow me to turn to that, the answer to the third question, which is that as it relates to the tension between the board's review of section 5103 big A and section 7113 little B. The secretary would submit that under both statutory provisions, the board reviews the same evidence but conducts two very different analyses. Under section 7113 little B, the board considers the hearing testimony to evaluate whether service connection is warranted. And that's what the board did in this case. It determined that the veteran, that the evidence suggests the veteran does have current disabilities, but that the evidence was insufficient to establish nexus. Under Section 5103 Big A, the board only considers if the AOJ previously committed an error. The board no longer considers if new development is required. And the secretary would submit that this distinction is precisely what Congress intended when they limited the scope of the duty to assist only to the AOJ. And to put this analysis a different way, if the analysis in the remand that the board would conduct is the same analysis and remand they would have done under the legacy appeal system, this contradicts the clear intention of Congress when it explicitly limited the scope of the duty to assist to the AOJ. Congress made a very specific choice to change the scope of the duty to assist, and the secretary would submit that the only way to give effect to this intention is if the duty to assist analysis and remand authority by the board is now different. And so under the legacy system, the secretary would agree that the board should be remanding for further development. The board has identified new facts or change in circumstances from the September 2022 hearing, evidence or circumstances and facts that the prior VA examiners never considered, and therefore the duty to assist was not adequate and further development would be needed. However, under the AMA appeal system, Congress made very specific changes, and the secretary would submit that the only way to give effect to that intention is to limit the scope of the board's review and to draw the distinction that the secretary is making now.
There's nothing in those changes that says anything about limiting the scope of the board's review, is there? This is just a sense of Congress argument.
No, Your Honor, we would submit that the plain language of subsection E and F2, which limit the scope of the duty to assist, perhaps this is the way to articulate it. Even if the board were permitted to review in the larger context, consistent with the appellant's position, its authority to remand for correction of that duty to assist error would be limited to only errors committed by the AOJ prior to issuance of the rating decision. And we would say that this distinction between the prior legacy system and under the new AMA system is intentional. And the secretary would note that under the overall AMA statutory structure, that Congress specifically identified a problem under the legacy system that it sought to correct. And that is, under the legacy system, veterans had to wait a very long time for final decisions. And as part of that, they were experiencing these endless cycles of remands initiated by the AOJ or by the board. And so Congress made very specific changes under the AMA to address this problem. One of those changes was limiting the scope of the AOJ, the duty to assist, only to the AOJ. Another change was limiting the scope of the board's review to evidence submitted at certain times and its scope of the duty to assist review. And as a final change, the board, Congress permits veterans to select multiple appeal options in sequence continuously. And so when the board denies a claim now, it is no longer the final decision of the agency. It no longer terminates appellant's appeal. Appellant can select the next appeal option continuously and in sequence. And indeed, in this case, even after the court affirms the board's denial of service connection, appellant can file a supplemental claim. And if he does so within a year, he can continuously pursue and preserve the effective date. The secretary would submit that the board's limited review is by design and consistent with the overall AMA appeal structure. Congress, as part of this overall scheme, created the supplemental claim. It created a mechanism within AMA to do exactly what appellant is asking for, which is to have, if a veteran has new evidence and they wish to invoke VA's duty to assist based on that evidence, the AMA appeal structure dictates that they must file a supplemental claim. And again, if after the court affirms the board's denial, appellant can still file that supplemental claim and continuously pursue his appeal. I will turn to the court's fifth question, which was appellant was provided with sufficient notice of the limits of the duty to assist as part of the statement of appellant rights provided with the April 2019 rating decision. The secretary notes that in the statement of appellant rights in addressing supplemental claims, the appellant rights indicates, and I quote, VA will assist you in gathering new and relevant evidence to support a supplemental claim. Regarding a board appeal, the appellant rights indicates, and I quote, the board does not have a duty to assist you in obtaining additional evidence. At all times, appellant was represented by counsel, and with the advice of counsel, appellant chose an appeal option.
Counsel, I believe that what we meant by that question was whether they were informed that, or at least one of the things I meant by that was whether the veteran was informed that the hearing testimony was hollow. Like, you're going to wait 3 years and then the board is not going to be able to do anything with your hearing testimony, unless, of course, you happen to be able to get an outright grant. But they can't grant based on your new testimony before the board.
Your Honor, I just want to clarify, are you saying that? Well,
before you said that he was properly notified, and then you just quoted something that said, like, the duty to assist isn't going to apply at the board. But was he notified that any information and evidence that he gave during the board hearing would, it's essentially like the board can't do anything. It's like, can't do anything with it.
Well, first,
this is a notice that he would have to receive at the time he's exercising his review options.
Yes, yes.
An explanation as to what those review options are, entail, and can do.
Yes, Your Honor. This, what I'm referring to is the statement of review options. So when he was sent the April 2019 rating decision, and this is at page 10,097 of the record.
Yes, that's the one I was looking at.
Yeah, this is part of the package sent to appellant when he received the April 2019 rating decision. It does outline his various appeal options, and the Secretary of Smith, it does explain to him, you know, the limitations of the duty to assist. And so when he chose to file an appeal to the board, he was explained that the duty to assist no longer applied.
Well, I'm looking at that 197. That's what you said, right?
10,097. Yes.
Can you read to me what it says under appeal to the board?
Yes. The language I quoted or the whole thing, Your Honor?
Well, you already quoted, so I don't want you to repeat, but why don't you just read the whole thing?
Okay. Use this appeal option to the board for consideration by a veterans law judge. You may appeal to the board from the supplemental claim decision or a high level review decision. When appealing to the board, you may request a hearing with veterans law judge and or opportunity to submit additional evidence. You may also choose from the board to review your claim.
Okay. I starred that in my copy, that sentence that you just read, that you may request a hearing and or the opportunity to submit additional evidence. Does it say anything in there about the limitation that we're talking about here? That no matter what evidence you submit, it can't be the basis for a board remand or for further development?
It's not explicit.
No, and in fact, it says that the board does not have a duty to assist you in obtaining additional evidence, but may review whether VA properly fulfilled its duty to assist you in the original claim process and may remand your claim on that basis.
Correct, Your Honor. The Secretary would submit that this is entirely consistent with its position that if the AOJ commits an error as a duty to assist, the board must remand under 20.802 subsection A, first sentence. And indeed, this is the obligation under 5103 big A, subsection F2. That the only limitation here is that if the new evidence were to suggest the need for new development, under the new AMA appellate structure, the board is no longer permitted to remand for that new development. And that's what the appellant is asking for in this case.
Right. Well, we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about the notice that the veteran got regarding that, supposed limitation.
The secretary would just return to that last small paragraph where it indicates that the board doesn't have a duty to assist you in attaining additional evidence, and that is the limitation that's the limitation under the statute. Turning to my last additional point, that the secretary emphasizes that the AMA appellate structure already provides a mechanism for accomplishing what a veteran wishes to do here. If the veteran wishes to have VA consider the September 2022 hearing testimony as part of the duty to assist, the AMA appeal structure already provides for a mechanism, and that is to file a supplemental claim. And again, the secretary reiterates.
Oh, Mr. Yu, so Section 2802A, I believe, says that the board shall remand to correct a pre-decisional duty to assist error and may remand to correct other AOJ errors in fulfilling statutory or regulatory duties if correction had a reasonable possibility of substantiating the claim. So what's your understanding of that second remand basis?
Consistent with the court's holding in Green that it is broader than the mandatory remand for a duty to assist, and that the board would be permitted to remand for those additional reasons. However, in this case, Helen hasn't identified those additional reasons, nor carried their burden of persuasion in establishing that remand would be warranted under that second
and
sentence.
What basis did Green find
the specific facts of Green were that the board was obligated to consider as part of entitlement to TDIU the board's own grant of service connection. And so the original denial for the entitlement to TDIU on a Green was that at the time of the AOJ decision, there was no service connected disability, and therefore the court established that the board must.
Yeah. So apart from the specific facts there, how would you characterize that as a basis for remand?
The secretary would note the important distinction out of Green is that the court found that the board decision is not evidence. And so therefore there were no limitations on the consideration of the board's decision. But under the AMA, the board's review now is much more limited. You can only consider evidence submitted at certain times. And the secretary would submit that under 5103 big A, its review as it relates to the duty to assist is now also much more limited. And that is by design and intentionally created by Congress in doing so. The secretary notes that in this case, that appellant's choice of appeal option, and as a result and a consequence of that choice, pursuant to the court's holding in Lloyd, the duty to assist no longer applied after the issuance of the rating decision. And if there are no additional questions, I will briefly conclude.
Mr. Yu, if Congress intended that the AOJ's fulfillment of the duty to assist requirement was frozen in time, wouldn't they have used the language of clear and unmistakable error claims that say that the review would be based on the evidentiary record that was before the AOJ? They didn't say that.
No, Your Honor, they didn't use that language, but the secretary would submit that when they use the language under F2, that the error must have occurred prior to the AOJ decision now on appeal, that's Congress's intention is to only consider. And again, the secretary's position is not that the board can't consider new testimony in determining if a prior error had been made. The point is that the board must have identified that the error must have occurred by the AOJ prior to issuance of the rating decision. And the distinction here is that the September 2022 hearing testimony is establishing new facts. It is creating new and a change in circumstances. This is not a circumstance in which the AOJ committed some error, but some new development where would have warranted remand for development under the duty to assist under the legacy appeal system. And that when Congress changed the AMA appeal system, it intended to cut off the duty to assist at the time of issuance of the rating decision. And if the AOJ didn't commit that error, the appellant needs to file a supplemental claim to re-invoke VA's duty to assist. If there are no further questions, I will briefly conclude. The court should find that the board's review of the September 2022 hearing testimony in this case was proper and affirm the board's denial of service connection based on the lack of evidence of nexus.
You kind of jumped the gun there, Mr. Yu. Judge Greenberg, do you have any further questions?
No.
And Judge Jaquith, do you have further questions?
No, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Yu. And Mr. Dukakis, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Secretary's singular focus on the duty to assist ignores all the other consequences of the board actually making the findings of fact. And I hammer this over and over because I don't think that the secretary, well, I know the secretary doesn't, and I hope that the court appreciates how important these findings of fact are, not only because the statute tells them they must do it, But from the claimant's perspective, opening up the supplemental claim, as the secretary points out, is very helpful, but it's not helpful if the board fails to make those findings. He claims that it's harmless if the board violated FIT 7104A, or I'm sorry, 7104 in a way that is counter to the AMA framework. Yes, he can file a supplemental claim, but that's an illusory right if the board merely considered the evidence without making the findings of fact. The AOJ can't change the board's affirmance of the no disability finding without new and relevant evidence. The board acknowledged in its decision that the evidence it had might change that finding, but didn't make that finding. And so if the board, if that evidence does in fact change the finding that he does have a current disability, Mr. Martin is prohibited under the statute from presenting that testimony, which the VA has already considered as evidence of a current disability. Now he has to go out and get additional evidence. That cannot be how Congress intended this process to work. The board has, and that's the reason the board has the legal obligation to make these findings when they have the evidence and not kick the can down the road and suggest that, oh, it might be wrong, but we're not going to tell you whether it is. And oh, by the way, since we've already looked at the evidence, you got to go get new evidence. Mr. Martin presented his testimony to the VA, to the secretary. Remember, 7104, 511, both say that the decisions are made by the secretary. The secretary is also concedes, thankfully, that yes, evidence and testimony can show a change in the decision, I'm sorry, the duty to assist error, but that's not what the board said. The board, looking at page 6 of the record, thus, any arguments or evidence regarding the claims which were not already of record at the time of the decision cannot form the basis for any remand directives. Page 10, the board also says, at the time of the decision, the evidence during the relevant period weighed persuasively against a finding he had current disability. Hearing testimony was not of record at the time of the decision. Is to demonstrate that there was no pre-decisional duty to assist error. So although the secretary, we agree to the extent that he says the new evidence can show the board that an error had been made, that's not what the board said in this decision. The board said it cannot, never, ever. Not that it can, but in this case, it didn't. It says it cannot. Those words are important to the decision here. The BVA's finding that the evidence, again, the secretary points out that the board denied the claim because there was no evidence of a nexus, but that is an incomplete finding because, again, they never went that next step and told Mr. Martin whether he does in fact, or whether the record shows that he does in fact have a current disability. Without the two, without that finding, the finding of no nexus is really incomplete and irrelevant. And Judge Bartley, I would just emphasize to your questions on the back claim. I would just urge this court that I agree with you, of course, that there was an error there. And but again, this should have been part of the 5104 notice that was never given. As you indicated in your question, Judge Bartley, where in the decision did the AOJ tell Mr. Martin any of this? And the answer is they didn't. They just said no. And that's really the extent of it. You don't have a disability and no. And 5104 really, in changing how 5104 notifies veterans, Congress wanted more information to the veterans so that they can make these choices and process through. And then lastly, I would just point out on harm and prejudice. I would just really urge the court to look at its decision in Simmons v. Wilkie, 30 Vet App 267. And, you know, a lot of focus is usually put in the court's decisions. And I see I'm almost out of time. I hope you'll let me finish this point on whether it would change the outcome. But this Simmons really said that that's one way. But when an error abrogates the essential fairness of the adjudication or deprives the claimant of a meaningful opportunity to participate in the process in the claim, the error has the natural effect of being prejudicial. Here, the framework invented by Congress, endorsed by the VA, was that they would get piecemeal decisions from the VA on the evidence that they have. The statute requires these findings to be made, and the VA didn't do that, and that has the natural effect of harming Mr. Martin at least to the extent that he deserves and is owed findings of fact. So in conclusion, we would ask the court to set aside the board's decision, order it to comply with 7104, make the findings of fact, and then look at how that assesses its other legal obligations.
Thank you, Mr. Dahakis. And the court thanks counsel, both counsel, for your arguments. The case is submitted. Thank you.
The court is in recess.